97.5, The Fanatic.
We got Marcus Hayes on the line right now on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast, and he wrote a brilliant article today about the exact subject I'm talking about. And I was going to talk to him about another article he had written, and I just came across this article in the last hour or two. So it kind of works with what we're talking about tonight. So without further ado, Ink-Stained Wretch. What's up, my brother?
Good evening, Joe. You're not trying to pull the statue of Frank Rizzo down, are you?
No, I'm good, man. They hold me up in here just for that reason. I'm good. I loved your article. I couldn't agree with you more. Let me ask you this. First of all, as an African-American male, forget about the fact you're a brilliant writer and you work in the media and whatnot. How did the whole situation make you feel when you watched the tape?
The rioting or the
incident, yes.
When I was 21 years old, I drove from Syracuse, New York to Florida for a vacation. I was working at the Syracuse Herald Journal. And my father, who was a Marine and a brick mason and a farmer, he's not a man of many words. The only advice really he ever gave me in my life was, don't speed in Georgia. And I said, what do you mean? He says, just don't get pulled over in Georgia. Don't go off the highway. Don't get gas. Don't pull over. Do not speed in Georgia. And that's why. Because at that point in 1990, 1991, things were worse than they are today. And, being a black man in America, I tell people this all the time, and you don't really have to be very black. I'm not very black. But if you're not white and you might be black, you have to live life differently. You can't talk to cops the way that white guys talk to cops. You can't talk to women the way white guys talk to women.
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk to bouncers the way white guys talk to bouncers. You just can't. I mean, it's a different set of rules. I'm not complaining about it, but we're talking about it, and that's just the way it is. And you either adapt or you don't. And I've been telling people this. In the early 90s, we had something called, sensitivity training or diversity training or something like that. It was being sponsored around most of the corporations, and the company I worked for sponsored it. We had so few people of color in our company that myself and this other, a black woman, we had to do it 3 times so we could talk about our experiences with different groups as they came through the program. But I've been talking to people about this for years. I mean, this is our reality when we are put in a position where a person of authority, a cop or a state trooper or, somebody like that can kill you, you expect them to kill you. That's your default function. I mean, I've been pulled over 87 times. I've gotten 2 tickets. Both times were on interstates in construction speed traps. But I've been pulled over 85 times and let go just because they wouldn't pull me over.
Interesting. 85 times.
Arizona.
You might want to slow down.
I'm not, that's the thing. They can't write me a ticket because I'm not speeding. That's the thing. When you're raised as a black man in America, if you have a person who will tell you, they will tell you, these are how you... Colin Kaepernick has spent the last 4 years espousing this cause called Know Your Rights.
Right.
And I'm not 100% with Kaepernick and everything he does and says, but what it does is he's teaching young black people how to interface with cops, with people of authority, so they don't get shot, so they don't get abused, so they don't get killed, so they don't get a knee on their neck and die.
Amazing. So tragic. Now, let me ask you this, because you wrote in your article, and Carson Wentz, you included his tweet and Zach Ertz tweeted. They both tweeted Thursday. I'm trying to get a feel for where you're really coming from, because in one way you laud them for coming out, especially Carson Wentz, and speaking out in support of, like the causes Colin Kaepernick was for, and certainly with sympathy for the situation. But you also kind of say, well, he did it Thursday instead of Monday, and maybe he should have been there when Malcolm Jenkins was protesting, and maybe if he went to a rally, it would be a little different. Where are you on Carson Wentz?
Well, as I also wrote, we all learn at a different pace, and, maybe Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz have learned that this is the biggest climate change is probably our biggest problem. This is the biggest problem that we can immediately address in the United States and has been for 400 years. You know, I mean,
yeah.
We all learn at a different pace. So maybe they've learned, maybe they haven't. I'll put it to you this way. Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz are getting headlines and national headlines for tweeting, hey, you know, this makes me angry, it makes me sad. Jaylen Brown, one of the Boston Celtics, drove 15 hours to lead a protest in Atlanta. And Tobias Harris is on the streets of Philadelphia right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's there are different levels of commitment. And I'm not saying Carson Wentz should drive 24 hours from North Dakota and leave his new baby and his wife to, you know, quell protests in Philadelphia. But, you know, Zach Ertz could probably, you know, go down to City Hall and hang out a little bit and make himself seen. And that's not to diminish what Zach and Julie do. I mean, they're spectacular people. But this is a huge issue. And both of them were in the same locker room as Michael Bennett and Chris Long and Malcolm Jenkins for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And, they didn't say a peep then. And God bless them. They're saying something now. What they're saying is, as America burns, I think it's a fair question. Where would they be if there were no riots? Where were they Tuesday and Wednesday
before
you know, there was so much civil unrest, before everyone else was outraged? And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. Again, we all learn at our own pace. These aren't bad guys, and neither are other, you know, white guys who are saying stuff like this. Guys like Brian Kelly, the Notre Dame coach, who admitted, you know, I've been quiet for too long. But, you know, you've got your own interests to protect. Like the NFL came out with a statement saying, hey, you know, we're right with you. You know, we feel bad about everything that's happened. And ironically, the person that we all, you know, should sort of look to at this moment, Colin Kaepernick, was blackballed by the owners for 4 years.
Right. I just said that.
For saying what the NFL just said.
Just said.
For doing what the NFL, you know, that's just so hypocritical. And it's not everybody in the NFL. I mean, one of the NFL spokesmen, Joe Lockhart, wrote a piece in CNN today, CNN.com, that says Goodell and the rest of the league were trying to encourage owners and owner to give Colin Kaepernick a job, and they wouldn't do it. Now, that may or may not be true. It's hard for me to believe. But the owners were, you know, unified and colluded to not do that because they didn't want to affect their own bottom line. One owner told Joe Lockhart, that would cost me 20% of my season ticket base, which would, you know, that doesn't mean that his season ticket base is totally sold out. That could have been, you know, somebody in Miami or Jacksonville, or I'm pretty sure season ticket bases aren't sold out. But you're not going to lose 20% of your season ticket base if you sign Carson Wentz going into the Super Bowl in 2018. You know, you might lose 2,000 fans, but, you know, for goodness sake, you signed Michael Vick and got more people come to the stadium eventually.
Yep. And certainly did. Let me ask you, we have Marcus Hayes from the Philadelphia Inquirer on the Comcast Business Hotline. Marcus, do you think, because, I mean, he is receiving accolades nationwide and locally as well, and you and myself, do you think, I mean, you're right, he didn't say boo when the whole Malcolm Jenkins and Colin Kaepernick thing was going on a couple of years ago. Now he's speaking out. Do you think this elevates his status among his teammates at all? The black teammates?
I think a little bit. I think, you know, but again, we're talking about a very young man who lived a very sheltered life, and it goes beyond the social justice or you know, civic unrest sort of topics. Carson's a very, very young man. He hasn't experienced a lot of life. He's been very sheltered. And that's not a knock on him. That's just that's the life he's led.
Sure.
It's not his fault necessarily. So as these things become more apparent to him, more evident to him, I think we do sort of see the content of his character. And we've seen more of the content of Zach Ertz's character. You know, he and Julie are very active and very vocal. I did a story on them about a month and a half ago. You know, they, out of the blue, treated the ICU staff at the Hospital University of Pennsylvania to breakfast one day. You know, they had no connection. They just said, hey, we should do this. That they're good people. They're really good people.
Sure.
But, you know, these are issues that take some people, it takes them a lifetime to understand. People who are much less sheltered and much less of a bubble and with a lot less to lose than Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz. So good on Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz for saying something been getting behind, you know, not even a cause, an issue. It's not like, okay, this is the next, you know, this is our goal. This is, people always ask Colin Kaepernick, what's your goal? His goal is to change America. Maybe to change the world, but certainly to change America, how American black American men are perceived by police and how black American men are treated by police. That's his goal. And no, he's not going to change it overnight, and the NFL is not going to change it overnight because he kneels during the national anthem. But it starts a dialogue, and if it helps one cop, black or white, treat one black guy better, then it's worth all of it. Because if Colin Kaepernick loses $50 million in salary, how much is one life worth? How much are 10 lives worth?
Mm-hmm.
How much are 1,000 lives worth?
Excellent point. So how do we really make it's not quantifiable. We have no idea if any of this has helped so far, all the protests or the marches in the past and currently. How do we really make a dent into this problem?
Well, first you probably have to vote out the president, because the president and his Department of Justice have to make this a priority, and they've done everything but make it a priority. So that's probably, you know, step one, and the people who are like him, because they don't make this a priority. And that's just their platform. That's who they are, you know. And if you like that, fine. You know, it's America. You can like it. I don't like it. The people on the streets all around the country right now don't like it. But that's how you change it. You change the way that you police. And more than anything else, I think the thing that sort of goes obscured here, you're going to have bad cops. You're going to have bad journalists. You're going to have bad radio hosts. You know, the world is full of bad people and good people. Colin Kaepernick's greatest issue was that when the bad apples surface, they are not punished.
Mm-hmm.
That was his greatest issue. You know, not necessarily Malcolm Jenkins' greatest issue. Malcolm Jenkins' greatest issue is, you know, the legal system and how it oppresses black people disproportionately, whether it's socioeconomically, whether it's racial, whatever. But the biggest issue for Colin Kaepernick is, okay, when you find a bad apple, get rid of it. This guy, Chauvin, was a bad apple.
Mm-hmm.
And he killed a guy, and we watched it happen. So that was his point. That's the issue. When the bad apples surface, take them out of the barrel. So to answer your question, that's the answer. Take the bad apples out of the barrel. If you know a guy's a bad apple, take him out of the barrel preemptively. Or a woman.
Do you have any idea what the maximum sentence for third-degree murder is, by chance, in Minnesota?
I don't. I just read that was the charge, one of the charges.
Right.
For him. I do not know. Do you know?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up in a second, see if I can find out. I'm just curious. Third-degree murder obviously is less than second or first. And I think, you know, worst-case scenario is he gets acquitted. I don't know if that's going to happen this time around. How do you see that? How do you see that playing
out? Well, they need to demand an independent autopsy at first, because the coroner's report tries to absolve him of any guilt. It starts mentioning underlying conditions.
I know.
I would say this. If the coroner's report isn't addressed, they might burn Minneapolis to the ground by the end of next week. But that's just awful. I mean, there are coroners going on Twitter right now saying, this is ridiculous. This is the most absurd thing I've ever read.
Incredible. He's Marcus Hayes, the great Marcus Hayes. You can follow him on Twitter at InkStainedWretch. You can read his article on Philly.com, TheEnquirer.com. Great stuff, Marcus. Appreciate you having you on, man. I loved your article, and keep the faith.
All right, Joe. Stay safe.
You too, buddy. Thank you. Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline. Got to take another break. I'll come back. We'll talk about some of the things Marcus had to say.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.